will maintain until Christmas. I believe what we need is daily sanitization in our rooms. We need 3 to 6 feet of distance at all times between all bodies, which in my mind means very organized, traceable cohorts, and should have meant hybrid at least to begin with, because we have a teacher shortage. And if we can't maintain it, then we need to shut it down. It is what it is. It sucks and we all hate it, but it also is how we keep people safe. I would say that most importantly is transparency, because each person needs to know, honestly, like people need to know when somebody is test positive. And it's like Catherine shared the information on Facebook. That's how I knew that Catherine had tested positive, not because the school told me that somebody whose classroom might go in and give a mask break to for a kid every day had tested positive, but because she gave that public information out. She did that on her own. Staff weren't informed of that. We as staff need to know if our other staff are, you know, families need to know if somebody that their kid is sitting in a classroom with every day is exposed. And we need, like you said, need to have access to those tests.
I would have liked, I'd like to see some choice. I know many students need to be in schools. They're not doing well at home. They're social creatures, but there should have been some choice. And like Ginger said, some way to distance them. My son was doing fine at home. I was doing fine at home. I didn't like it. I loved teaching. The few days I had with my kids, I explained to them how excited I was to be their teacher, how happy I was to be with them, how much I love their age group, and how scared I was about bringing this home to my children. And I don't think I'm the one that brought it home, but it came home.
Well, I want to thank you three so much for joining us, Ginger and Beth and Catherine, on KBOO tonight. And thank you to Jamie Partridge for helping us convert this to a radio-ready file. Thank you, audience, for tuning in tonight. Thank you, Stephen. This is Rachel Haynes. You've been listening to Labor Radio. Tune in next Monday and every Monday at 6 to catch another Labor Radio show.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel?
Hi, greetings and welcome to Prison Pipeline, airing from the studios of KBOO Portland. I'm your host, Adam Carpinelli. Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration. Today, we're here with Morlock with Past Lives. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's a pleasure to have you, and let's get right to it. Can you tell us about yourself, how you got involved with all this great work that's going on in the community?
All right. Well, I'm Morlock. I served 5 years in prison, well, almost 5 years, from 2016 to the end of 2020. I was in engineering school. I was a nerd, not out here trying to commit crimes or anything, but I did experiment with LSD a few times. And on the third time, I lost control and attempted to commit suicide, and in the process ended up taking out one of my friends. So I got a criminally negligent homicide charge after causing a car accident. So I, of course, felt horrible. He was a very good friend of mine that was helping work on something very similar to the project that we have today, Past Lives. And he paid for his association with me with his life. So I wanted to do something positive with my life. I wanted to honor his memory. And very early on in this experience, in fact, in the hospital, after the accident, while I was being evaluated for arrest, I decided that I'm going to continue. I don't need to finish an engineering degree. I can just study my ass off. I probably am going to be facing some time. And I did that. I landed in Jackson County Jail, started having my friends and family send me books on business, economics, law, human resource management, city planning, anything that I could get my hands on to study the creation of a successful, collectively financed and rehabilitative resource. I served most of my sentence at a place called South Fork Forest Camp in Tillamook, Oregon. It is a prison labor camp focused on applying inmate labor resources to forestry and firefighting. I had to do very little of those things. I ended up as the librarian, actually. So I had a pretty awesome spot to commit myself to my studies, and paired up with a program called SCORE, the Service Corps of Retired Executives, and they provide professional mentors to entrepreneurs. And you send them a business plan and they pair you up with somebody that worked in generally and retired from a relevant field. So almost 5 years of study, I released in September 24th of 2020 in the middle of the pandemic and began building Past Lives, which at its foundation is a makerspace. We pay for warehouse space in ADX on Southeast 11th and Stark. And we now have a fully equipped wood shop, metal shop, electronics lab. We do a little bit of engineering, have some CNC machines, blacksmithing studio, graphic design, web development, and general arts like painting and drawing and sculpting. So the whole point of it is to work toward creating employment opportunities for people coming out of the prison system and giving them the possibility of leveraging the skills that they developed in forced labor. So we learn all kinds of skills on the inside. We do fabrication and woodworking and metalworking, automotive. Some people do electronics, garments. There's a lot of skills that are being developed in there, but they have no way to leverage them on the way out. The prisons don't provide tail end references. They don't pair us up with job opportunities, and we're left seeking positions in things we don't know how to do that are very low pay, because people tend not to want to hire somebody with a criminal record, especially depending on the types of crimes that they've committed. So we have all of these workspaces, all of these industrial and art tools, and generally people pay a membership to join our space and access our tools. Ex-convicts, at the very least, get a very significant discount if they have to pay anything at all. And that's kind of up to them. That's a discussion that we have between us. So at its core, we're able to provide a pretty awesome creative space to people from marginalized communities, especially people coming out of the prison system, but it's generally available for everyone. And we create things together. We help everyone sell their artwork. And the hope is that we can actually incubate small businesses here that in turn get staffed with people leaving the prison system with relevant skills. So these small businesses initially will be focused on the arts and industries, which are those, you know, which are representative of the skill sets that we are kind of made to develop. And in the meantime, we're also working with currently incarcerated people. We've just launched a program reaching out to artists in prison and musicians to see about getting their work sent out to us so that we can sell it for them at actual market value. The prices that inmates are able to get for their artwork are when they're selling it to each other and everybody's living on essentially a slave wage. So people are getting paid, you know, 20 to 50 cents an hour for truly exceptional artwork that they should be getting paid many magnitudes greater for. So that's a kind of a general rundown of what we're about.
Yeah, and it sounds like a lot of your team is a lot of artists in the Portland area, or can you tell us more about the whole larger milieu of this project and also how people could even support it if they're in the Portland community?
So yes, the bulk of our membership are local artists in Portland. We work with some out-of-state artists to post their artwork, their original artwork online, bring it to markets. We also manufacture merch in different kinds. Some of it we manufacture in-house, like framed artwork or whatever. And sometimes we go through companies like Sticker Ninja, who is awesome, we'll have our graphic designers render their artwork in a sticker-ready form and send it off to Sticker Ninja and then bring their stickers, which actually fetch a pretty good price and lots of people are interested in, to markets. and help artists develop a continuous stream of revenue for the work that they put out. So there are lots of artists and industrial workers, woodworkers, welders, engineers that are really contributing to not only financing it through their memberships, but investing their personal time and skill sets in building out the space. Outside of local and non-local artists, we have local organizations that we're working with, like the Oregon Justice Resource Center and Creative Resistance. And we're trying to get in touch with Central City Concern, Southeast Works, and WorkSource, hopefully put together some kind of sponsorship program, which I'll get to at the end of this. One of the most valuable human resources that we have are people that are serving long sentences in prison, lifers. They are turning out to act as our liaisons between the outside world and creative people on the inside that either are or are not releasing. So they're kind of like our counselors in a way. We reach out to them, we form relationships with them. They call me on my phone all the time. They're allowed to call me at any time, write us letters. There's a secured email system that they have access to through tablets and terminals. And they send artists our way and help us spread the word within the prison system, and even help us network with staff members that they have formed relationships with over very long periods of time.
Well, one thing, and I want to hear more about the program, but just kind of backtracking a little bit, because you also mentioned some really important things that people, the general public, I should say, takes for granted, especially those who are not friends and family members of incarcerated persons and or formerly incarcerated persons, which is the whole issue about work, about labor, about wages. You mentioned slave wages, you know, and this is something that has been probably more prominent in kind of the language when talking about the prison industrial complex, kind of more recent times in the 21st century, but, you know, and even the way that people talk about, you know, abolition and these kind of like older concepts that are, well, they obviously resonate today, right, but also take on new meanings and things of that nature. So can you just talk a little bit more about that importance of kind of with the work that y'all do, how it's really responding to this issue of unfair wages and extraneous labor, you know, on the part of workers who are prisoners?
I think it's, of course, a tremendous human rights violation in a lot of ways. I mean, it's at a ridiculous scale. It's a different human rights violation than, for example, somebody on the outside sneakily paying less than minimum wage. They're paying, you know, cents per hour in most cases. So that is absurd. I think that it's an incredibly difficult thing to challenge at that level or to reform, because, or in the case of a state like Oregon, where the amount of money that goes into running prisons, the amount of expenses just to have prisons operating and all the staff and food and utilities and everything is far, far greater than the amount of money that they're recapturing by contracting inmate labor crews, for example. So in the case of Oregon, I mean, they're not really capitalizing the government itself isn't really capitalizing too terribly much. I think it's extremely exploitative, but the corporations, the government, you know, the corporations, the private individuals that do contract with the Department of Corrections are making a killing because they are able to pay, you know, $750 for a full labor crew for a day. And that's 12 people's wages for an entire day is far greater than that. So unless some like tremendous massive movement happens, I think it's really difficult to challenge. That's why I kind of focus on the inmates themselves or the formerly incarcerated people themselves. The artwork that they can produce, the things that they're making in the hobby shops, if they have a hobby shop at the prisons, which I don't think most of them do, and send out to us, we can actually get them a fair market value for. And there is a market for it that we're trying to expand and explore. And it's a great way for people to support that, like what we're doing. The prison's never going to pay them a fair wage, right, in their current stage. But we can buy artwork from them. A lot of them are creative, and we can help pair them with employment opportunities, either within an organization like this or simply another company that needs labor, installing gutters or something at decent prices. And I'm not really interested in pairing ex-incarcerated people up with awful jobs. So my focus is developing the personal revenue streams of the inmates themselves, kind of outside of what is going on with inmate labor resources. I think that my angle will give them a lot of opportunity. I think my time is better spent on helping them build a small business or helping them pair up with businesses on the outside than any hope that I have of challenging the economics of prisons.
Can you talk a little bit more about the challenges in general too, for when people are getting out? You know, you kind of touched upon it a little bit, and that's obviously the work that you're all responding to there, is that challenge when people get out. But again, another thing that probably people don't maybe understand the full scope of, you know, generally speaking, is what that situation really looks like when people get out, you know, and you know, everybody's looking for a job these days, you know, states like Oregon that have really high unemployment, for example, right? And then to top it off, somebody has a record, you know, and of course there's been things like Ban the Box and these things come up. And so can you just talk more about that?
So I think at the first barriers that somebody releasing from prison are in a lot of ways the most important. So outside of finding gainful employment, people are releasing without IDs, they're releasing without homes, without transportation, without any way to communicate with the world, or even like the knowledge of how a smartphone works or the ability to read. So all of those things hit you all at once. Figuring out your Oregon health plan, medical benefits, and everything, it is a tremendous bureaucratic nightmare to figure out and sort out any one of these things. And they're all interconnected. Like, how are you gonna get a job if you don't have your social security card? And how are you gonna get your social security card without being able to prove who you are, without your birth certificate? How do I do that? What office do I call, and how do I call them without a phone? And there's a lot of interconnected barriers that prevent people from finding job placement, even outside of any sort of cultural stigma around hiring ex-convicts. Like, how do they even find out where to apply or how to apply legitimately if they don't have their documents? That's the situation that we're facing when we get out. The state doesn't guarantee that they're going to provide us even basics like a birth certificate, social security card, and valid state ID. And that alone, I think, in that most vulnerable time, when you're just getting out of prison and you have nothing, that alone would make a huge difference. So we're facing a lot of barriers just outside of finding employment. And people do, you know, even if you do have those things all sorted out, if you have a family that cares about you and is willing to help you navigate those things or give you a place to stay so you can slowly figure everything out, people do have an issue hiring even highly skilled people in an exactly relevant field. I learned how to be a machine operator. I learned fabrication. I learned woodworking while I was incarcerated. And going to the employment agencies, which I was specifically directed to find work opportunities, there was nothing. There was nothing. I think that the only job that they were willing to pair me with was making frozen pizzas in a freezer for minimum wage, like 2 hours away from where I live. And I don't even have transportation. So like, how the hell am I going to make that work? Especially on top of all the other stuff that is currently unresolved, like my IDs and, you know, independently, I applied for loads of jobs, got on, you know, I know how to use the internet, which sets me at, you know, some kind of advantage, and I know how to write well. So getting on Indeed and every single job seeking platform that I possibly could, I sent out hundreds of applications, you know, did nothing came back. Not a single time did I get anything back. I got tons of calls from scam organizations and robocalls and whatever else, which I can't even imagine what it would have been like to navigate that if I hadn't like already had experience with the internet and technology. Just a swarm of meaningless notifications. That would have been insane.
I think these are the things that people, you know, kind of need to understand, you know, more, and just that importance in supporting these folks. So for any folks just tuning in, you're listening to Prison Pipeline, airing from the studios of KBOO Portland. We're here with Morlock with Past Lives and this particular project based in the Portland, Oregon metro area, supporting formerly incarcerated persons with work, and also doing a full circle loop too, getting back to the folks inside, supporting their aesthetic endeavors, if you will, it sounds like, among other things. And can you talk about that whole connection with the art? Because it's some great art that I'm seeing on the website, but also this community that's, you know, outside of the facilities, and then also connecting inside the facilities, you know, with currently incarcerated persons. And so what does this whole kind of community look like? How does that work? Just kind of how the process works with getting in touch with folks and staying in touch, because it's hard to do that. And it sounds like you have a solid kind of way of doing that, or a solid community that's kind of, you know, making that connection, you know, with the inside and outside simultaneously.
Okay, well, let's start with the inside. I am formerly incarcerated myself and already have a pretty broad network of other currently incarcerated people, both with a release date and without. So I also did a pretty good job of maintaining a strong reputation and some credibility as an honest person and generally helpful, very interested in learning what barriers people were facing. And even when I had very little resources as a currently incarcerated person, doing anything that I could. So I left prison with a pretty large network of individuals all across the state. So I served at, I think, 5 different institutions, and also transfers are a pretty regular occurrence. So you get to know somebody at Two Rivers Correctional Institution that isn't going to see the parole board for another 30 years, if ever. And then they get transferred to, let's say, Oregon State Penitentiary, an institution that I've never been at. But now that I'm out, I have a close friend, actually a few, you know, friends that are at Oregon State Pen. And I got out, I got myself established. I focused much more on building the industrial and art space out here, just getting it set up, getting it to just float itself with our membership revenue. And once we were in a space that we were kind of able to pay for our expenses just to exist, kind of timed out perfectly with the release of my good friend, Adam Gregg, another person that I met on the inside. And he is our outreach coordinator now. He's currently working as a paralegal for the Oregon Justice Resource Center. Now, me and Adam, shortly after he got out, it was kind of contemporaneous with me reaching a stage where I wanted to do more prison outreach. And we started writing to our networks. We started writing letters to basically anybody with credibility that we remembered from the inside that we knew would be willing to work with us. We sent out a mass letter to everyone, but then we also sent out specific letters that, hey, Mike, it's Ole Morlock. Remember I was talking about this thing? Well, we did it. The time is now. So we need you to put us in touch with artists. And now we have people on the inside sending us their artwork. And it's an amazing experience to show up to work and have a new mysterious package from a prison and you don't know what's inside of it. And we usually like get together and open up this artwork and exclaim many times, and then we post it online and truck it around to markets. It's usually paired with their contact information, or usually I've had already developed some kind of a relationship with them, either through email, letter, or phone calls. And we, in our conversations, we talk business. You know, how do we want to move forward? Are you willing to do custom commissions? Because I have people out here that want Darth Vader portraits. You know, are you willing to fulfill that commission? Because I can send you all the reference material, reference photographs, and a description of the prompt. And I can do all of the like business and transactions until the project is completed. You get your money, Past Lives gets its money, and the client gets their artwork. And so there's like custom work that we can do with them. They can just send us artwork that they've independently been inspired to create. And we get on the phone and we start talking about things like, do you want me to make prints? Do you want me to make stickers? I think that this particular picture that you drew would be really great as a sticker. And we make a sale. All right, how do you want me to use this money? Do you want me to invest that money in more prints? Do you want me to send that to you? Do you want me to send that to your family? It's an ongoing conversation that I think gives them a lot of excitement and inspiration, and it gives them some like control in the world. There's this person on the outside, in fact, an entire organization of people that are interested in you as a currently incarcerated person developing a business that you can just be in charge of from in there. A piece of you is free. That's like what I love about this. It's those conversations and talking business strategy with people that I've never met who have probably never had the opportunity in one case for 32 years to actually have some kind of control over a thing that's going to make an effect in the outside world.
Well, speaking of which, we want to make sure that people are aware of how they can check out all this great art and support this project, maybe even get involved if they're formerly incarcerated or currently incarcerated and they're hearing the show or whatnot. So can you just talk about the different ways people can get in touch and what are the resources, social media and all that good stuff?
Yeah, of course. So you can find our website at pastlivesllc.com. our Instagram is Past Lives LLC. Now we post a lot of our artwork on there. We're pretty short staffed with photographers and social media people. So about half the artwork that we actually have is not currently on the website. So if you want to see that, you should come to our events every Friday from 6 to 10 p.m. at the ADX building on 11th and Stark. We have live music and we put out everyone's artwork, and it's an awesome thing. So we also go to other markets, or we pop up at places like Mount Tabor or Cathedral Park. Sometimes our friends, Family Mystic, their band, an awesome band actually, are playing out there, and we're just permanently invited to table at all of their shows. We also set up outside of Best Friends Cafe, and that's somewhere. I don't drive and I don't pay attention to geographic places, but it is a place that you can go, and it's awesome. And sometimes we have markets there. And other ways that you can support. If you're a creative person and you want creative space, that's going to give you access to way more equipment and community than most people can afford to find or source on their own. You can join us. You can catch a membership. We give $50 discounts to the membership fee to anybody from any kind of marginalized or systematically disadvantaged class. So that would be members of the LGBTQ or BIPOC communities, people over 65, veterans, who else? Anybody with a disability, anybody that is recently homeless, anybody that is ex-incarcerated, and I'm sure some more things, just ask. So membership would be between $110 to $160 a month, and that gives you 24-hour access to all of our equipment and our space. So that's a great way to support that you actually get a lot of value out of. If you're not a creative person, or you're not currently interested in having your own studio space or access to all these tools, but you still want to support, I think the coolest thing that you can do outside of buying art is to sponsor someone else's membership. So maybe somebody's getting out of some kind of tricky background. It could be ex-incarceration or whatever it is. And, or maybe not, maybe you just want to support an artist whose work you like. You can pay for their membership at a minimum, the $110 to $160. It'll probably be on the $110 side if somebody's being sponsored, and pay for their membership every month until 25% of their art sales is enough to cover their own membership. So I don't think that your work as a sponsor is done when the artist you're sponsoring is barely able to break even on honestly just one of their operational costs. I think that your work as a sponsor is finished when they are able to personally reinvest money in their small business in the arts or industries. So that's why we're saying you got to make, the artist makes four times the amount of money than is necessary to cover their own membership before they're no longer eligible for the sponsorship program. And at that point, you can choose to sponsor another person, or you can cease sponsorship knowing that you've done an awesome thing for someone. So in that case, we'll have a pretty intimate relationship with the sponsored artist. You can be as involved or uninvolved as you want. It could be a situation where the artist sends you photographs of the work that they've completed since their sponsorship began, so you can be really in touch with their creative process and their growth. If you even want updates on their like sales and where they're at in covering their own membership, that's the thing that we can provide. Basically, they would report all of their sales to us, and we would report that to you, and you would know exactly what's going on, which I personally like that. I think it's a cool idea if you and the artist are interested to form some kind of relationship, and maybe you yourself are an artist and you could act as a mentor. Another thing, we're always strapped for volunteers. We need photographers, we need web developers, woodworkers, metalworkers, people that can share skills with others. You mean software engineers. I don't know if I already mentioned graphic designers, but if I mentioned it twice, it's because it's really important. Don't be surprised on how applicable your skill set could be to helping this community out. So there's a few ways that you can support us. Buy artwork, show up to our events, sponsor people, mentor people, give people training, and just generally get involved. Contact me, we can figure something out.
All right, well, that is a big shout out for PastLivesLLC.com is the website, PastLivesLLC.com. And thanks so much for our guests. You've been listening to Prison Pipeline, airing from the studios of KBOO Portland. Listen to this and previous Prison Pipeline programs at kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. Like Prison Pipeline on Facebook. And of course, big thanks to Karen James, one of our collective members, for helping to edit the program. And we'll see you next time. Free them all. They won't build no schools anymore. Oh, they build where we prison, prison. They won't build no schools anymore. Oh, they build where we prison, prison. Cause today, yeah, I am a prisoner. I am a prisoner. I'm a prisoner.
KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
Hey KBOO members, it's time once again to vote and make your voices heard. KBOO's 2021 annual membership meeting and board election is coming up on Sunday, September 26th, from 1 to 3 p.m., live streaming from the Clinton Street Theater in Portland. KBOO members are invited to participate in a lively discussion on how to reconnect KBOO's diverse communities after 18 months of the pandemic, the role of radio in the 21st century, and the upcoming celebration of our 54th anniversary. KBOO depends on its members to help shape its operations and programming. So show your support by casting your vote and joining this community forum.